My Life as a Foodie is brought to you by BarkBox.com. We love BarkBox, but not as much as our dog Rex. Say hi to everybody, Rex. Come on, dude, like you mean it. Yeah, now we're talking. BarkBox is great. You tell them how big your dog's bark is, choose a plan, a 1, 6, or 12-month subscription, and every month, they'll send you a box of innovative toys and treats just right for your dog. Shipping is free, and you can cancel at any time. Sign up today, and listeners of the show will get 1 month added on to your subscription free when you sign up for 6 or 12 months. Just visit getbarkbox.com/foodie to take advantage of this special offer. Every month, BarkBox picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match your dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences. Edibles are made in the USA and Canada, and 100% of all products are tested on animals, their own. Because if it's not good enough for their dogs, it's not good enough for yours. It's cute, too. Every month, they have a theme like Country Fair, Bark Ball, Poo York City, Brooklyn Hipster, stuff like that. So it keeps things fun for you and your dog. Now, Michelle and I are deeply embedded in the dog business now, and everyone raves about BarkBox. Seriously, it's a real hit. It's a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses that you would otherwise be unable to find anywhere else. And if your dog doesn't like something in the box, they'll send your dog something they will love free of charge because they want your dog to be happy. They care that much. So take advantage of this special offer. 1 month free with your paid 6 or 12-month subscription. Visit getbarkbox.com/foodie and make your already happy dog even happier. No, hey, listen, I'm serious. I was working with this one guy. This was decades ago. My boss had invited him to his house to have dinner with him and his wife. And I don't know what she cooked, prime rib or something with these boiled potatoes. And she's serving him at the table. And she says, "How many potatoes would you like?" And he says, "Oh, I'll just have one, please." And she looks at him. She says, "It's okay. You don't have to be polite, you know?" So he says, "Fine then, I'll have one, you bitch." Hell yeah. Welcome back to the show. Just crushed my third cup of coffee today, so I'm feeling pretty good. Hey, so I have to say something here, and this is not a joke. I heard a funny bit from a comedian recently, and it reiterated something that I've been thinking about for a while, but I hadn't said anything. And I don't have any excuses for it, and I actually feel pretty bad about myself for it as well. So I wanted to come clean here and talk about it, kind of explain myself. I'm opinionated on this show, all right? I always have been, and I always come to the table with reasons, right or wrong, about why I have problems with some things or someone, be it corporations, people, Food Network personalities, or whatever. And I'm not unlike anyone else who has a microphone and a platform to spout off about things. It's been a cornerstone of this show for 10 years. In spite of his popularity, his goodwill, and the obvious abuse of Axe hair care products, I've never had any real reason to dislike or say the things that I have about Guy Fieri. I have gone around and around with Nathan about this, and he's always taken the high road with Guy. He's good friends with Guy, even having lost to him on Next Food Network Star. I hated that Nathan lost out to him on that show because I see Nathan as a chef, a good one, an ambassador to eating fresh and healthy, and always bringing fun, inspiring ways to prepare farm fresh items and bring them to the table. I don't see Fieri as a chef, at least not a very good one. But it wasn't Next Food Network chef, it was Next Food Network star. And a star is what they got with Guy. They would have gotten one with Nathan, but what Guy brought to Food Network was exactly what the network wanted, and apparently what they needed. It doesn't change my opinion of Food Network. I think they lost their way a long time ago, as I've said, just like MTV did when they replaced music videos with reality television. That's the path they chose to take, and it's obviously working out for them. And look, this program, my program, it's not a pimple on Food Network's ass. They hardly know about me if they know about me at all. So my opinions here don't, they're not even a blip on the radar. But I do have an audience, and I'm sure 90% of the things that I say here get chalked up to being comedic bits by an outspoken nobody, a jealous wannabe in the landscape of food entertainment. I don't care how this show or how I am perceived. This is solely infotainment. I provide information, inspiration, and hopefully some entertainment to the people that listen. But I do not have any real reason to dislike Fieri outside of the way he projects himself. And I'm not alone. All right. The guy comes off as a bit of a flashy cunt. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's right. Women don't like when you use the C word. A twat. Actually, wait. They don't like the T word either. Okay, he's kind of douchey, all right? With the hair on fire, the sunglasses on backwards, the bowling shirt with flames on it, the overt broness, the catchphrases. I mean, he's a walking frat party. It's not something I prefer to see in a host when I'm watching food-related programming. But what has he done wrong exactly? He's a good guy. Nathan says it all the time. He's a genuinely good guy, and he gives back constantly. Here's the clip from Shane Torres, courtesy of Comedy Central.
This may be somewhat of a controversial opinion, but can someone please explain to me what the fuck Guy Fieri ever did to anyone? Because people shit on that dude all the time. And as far as I can tell, all he ever did was follow his dreams. It's fucking insane how rude people are to this celebrity chef. They make memes and they tweet nasty shit and they have terrible blogs, and he didn't do anything wrong. Here's what he did do, Liberal Madison. He started a company where he hires everybody. He pays more than minimum wage. He gives health benefits before he has to. He has a nonprofit where he gives pretzel making machines to inner city schools so they can fundraise. I know that one sounds like I made it up, but I swear to Christ it's true. He has worked with Special Olympics athletes, and on top of all of that, he has officiated a gay wedding. But because he has flames on his shirt, everybody shits all over him like he's a member of Nickelback. And by the way, what the fuck did Nickelback ever do? And look, I get it. I don't want to hang out with him either, okay? I know he looks like a Hot Topic manager moonlighting at a Fridays. Just one end of the mall to the other. But he didn't do anything wrong.
I also read something recently about how on every episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Douche, he invites a kid from the Make-A-Wish Foundation to join him. And that includes his entire family. And now he doesn't have to do that, but he does. So there's that. I mean, shit, I was already feeling like a bit of a putz. You know, then I read that.
That should bother all of you. Not enough? What else has he done?
I'm so glad you asked.
He goes around the country to small businesses and gives them free advertising on a national platform. Advertising they could surely never afford themselves with his own television show. But because his hair looks like he was electrocuted while drinking Mountain Dew, people act like we need to saw his head off on the internet. Meanwhile, everybody loves Anthony Bourdain, and he seems like the kind of person that would be mean to dogs. So I don't understand what is happening. What does he do? It's like, oh, I put on Rolling Stones t-shirts and tell food carts they suck. Go fuck yourself. What are you bringing to the table?
I mean, that's me. I'm in that boat. I'm guilty of this as much, if not more, than anybody. And what is my problem with this guy? Someone who gives back constantly, who has made a career out of helping small businesses. I remember when he featured this family-run Italian restaurant in Anaheim that Kat and I used to go to all the time, Mama Koza's. When I found out he was going to feature Koza's on his show, I knew it was going to make a place that was already super busy into a madhouse. And I'm not sure I went back after that because I was just afraid, as it was always so busy. And you're hungry, and it's pizza, and you're starving, you know, and it's horrible to wait in a place like that. But I remember a story someone told me around that time. He had gone to this mom-and-pop diner somewhere in the Southwest, and they were shooting the show, and he loved the food. He went batshit for it. And when the cameras were off, he turns to the owner and he said, "Hey man, I'm sorry." And the guy said, what are you sorry for? He goes, "Because things are going to get crazy in this place once this airs. So get ready." He apologized for what he knew was coming, a business boost. He apologized for that as if he was doing something wrong. Where I should have been applauding this man, I've been chiding him. I feel like shit about it. I really do. And in the midst of shitting all over Fieri, I elevate Bourdain like some kind of saint. And trust me, I've had feelings about that for a while too. I'm a huge fan of Bourdain. Don't get me wrong, but that fucking guy can be a bully, and I know it. What he did to that writer at Eater when he wrote a short synopsis of that Rome episode of Parts Unknown was totally uncalled for. Twitter war, and the Bourdain army starts pounding this guy. He admittedly tried to ruin the guy and his career over something that really wasn't even offensive. Bourdain had a chip on his shoulder, a big one, and this guy was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So he took the brunt of Tony's anger. I don't like that. I didn't find it fair. And it really kind of took some polish off the diamond for me. And that's not the first time I've heard about that either, really. I won't go into specifics because I don't know how much of the story Bogner wishes to share, but Bobby was bullied by Bourdain's people at Travel Channel at the very first Taste Awards ceremony over something that Bobby couldn't even control. But they didn't care. They needed a punching bag, and Bobby was there. Well, fuck that and fuck them, really. Outside of the chef and restaurant discoveries and occasional one-liners and the inspiration that that show brings sometimes, my reverence of Bourdain and all of that is somewhat declining. And maybe it's just that time, I don't know. All I can say is, look, perhaps my focus is changing or I'm changing. My empathy overall is growing. And that could be because now more than ever, we're forced to look in the mirror a bit more. These times we're living in, what just happened in Charlottesville, I'm telling you, I don't want to be like that. I don't even want to even remotely come close to anything that resembles that. I mean, there's plenty of pie for everybody here.
If you had to choose between being stuck in a foxhole with Anthony Bourdain or Guy Fieri, you're going to go Fieri every time. What's Bourdain going to do? I'll tell you. He's going to be like that dude in every World War II movie who sucks the whole fucking time. Then when the Nazis show up, doesn't do his job, gets a bunch of good soldiers killed. Meanwhile, Guy Fieri's over here earning new nicknames like El Fuego. Picking up live grenades, throwing them back, saying dope shit like welcome to Flavor Town.
Woo!
And he knows he's dying on that beach in France that morning, but he's there fighting. And what do you guys do? You shit all over him just because he had his sunglasses on the back of his neck. I think it's fucking awesome there's a racing stripe on his fridge. Fucking love it if Banksy had painted it, wouldn't you? Ugh. Also, lay off Carrot Top. I met him. He's nice.
You know, I'd like to say my mom would be ashamed of me, but where do you think I got it? My mother was kind. She was a kind and loving woman, man, but when she had an opinion, she liked to talk. Yeah, so while we're on the topic of Food Network, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here, although that would be something you'd never see on Food Network, I read a great piece on how and why Food Network went south. Again, it reiterates what I said years ago, even during the first season of our show. But I'd read it here, but it's almost as if I wrote it. Now, basically, it talked about how the brass at the network went from providing quality cooking programs with the likes of Emeril, Mario, Jamie Oliver, Sarah Moulton, Ming Tsai, Michael Chiarello, Tyler Florence, to looking for ways to appeal to their demographic, which was changing, to get the most bang for their buck as it pertained to selling ads. And let's be honest. Advertising is the bread and butter. I started advertising here. I mean, sometimes it's just necessary. And the more likely you are to get a specific demographic to tune in, the more likely companies who appeal to that demographic will advertise on your network. And that's business. So like they did every week, they had asked Mario what he wanted to cook on his show, Molto Mario. And he went through the list. And he mentioned that he wanted to do this rustic dish with squid from southern Italy. And they lost their shit. They're like, are you crazy? You know, women watching the show don't want to see you cooking squid. We want you to cook chicken. Well, he's like, F you. You know, I'm not cooking a goddamn chicken. The next thing you know, he's competing like a circus monkey on Iron Chef America. And Emeril went from his quiet kitchen to cooking for a live crowd of screeching old women who juiced their panties every time he mentioned garlic. Molto Mario got replaced with Giada De Laurentiis and her magic cleavage, and Guy Fieri became the new face of the network. The last bastion of anything watchable on that network for me was Boy Meets Grill with Bobby Flay. I loved that show. It was authentic. He cooked outside. He chummed around with his pals. He drank beer. He made good food, but once he started these head-to-head competitions against amateurs and losing, I checked out. But just like MTV, Food Network creates the second channel, adequately named the Cooking Channel, and outside of a few episodes of Valerie Bertinelli's show, I really haven't seen much on there that I find worth watching. And the only reason I even bothered to watch Valerie's show is because I happened to be at Chrissy and Ludo's house for dinner one night, and she brought up the idea of putting together her own cooking show in the first place while we were having dinner. Yes, I was at the table with her and her husband. It was December 2013. And I'm not saying anything else about it because I respect their privacy and it was an honor to meet them. I will say that she loved my appetizers. Yeah, she said, dude, you can cook. So that was cool. Anyway, Valerie's show is worth watching. And that's actually a really good show. And I'm sure there are other shows on there worth watching as well. I'm sure I'm going to hear about it. But as you well know, the shows that I enjoy the most are experience shows like Made in Spain with Jose Andreas, Avec Eric with Eric Repair, Mind of a Chef, all PBS shows actually. I haven't watched much of the Travel Channel since 2013 either. You know, all that stuff, it just kind of dropped away from me once I met Michelle and started diversifying my interests, but I know I'll be back to talking about it soon enough.
Hey, Brian.
How are you, Chef?
I'm good. What gets you doing that sort of re-inspiring you here?
I'm doing a Peruvian-style anticucho. I'm poaching chicken for consistency and then marking it on the grill to get that charred flavor. Now I have a grill, so it should be better this time.
Right.
So the challenge I got eliminated from, it was about recreating a dish that was a turning point in your life, career. The dish I created was a dish that re-inspired my culinary career.
Brian's dish is interesting.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of flavor in what Brian cooked. It's heavy, it's intense.
I mean, it's tasty, but it's chicken breast.
Sort of a strange choice for Brian.
It's so boring.
It is so boring.
The judges really enjoyed my flavors, but unfortunately I used boneless, skinless chicken breast, and I definitely was not thinking. I think a lot of it has to do with the physical, mental, and emotional fatigue. Because bottom line, I really do feel that if I just had that damn skin on the chicken, I would have moved on. But I feel like I made a great run. I'm very proud of what I accomplished, and it's been a great experience.
Michelle and I had a pretty cool experience last week. She had found this food shack on Instagram that looked good. It was right on the beach in Corona del Mar, within plain sight of a home of one of the Real Housewives here in Orange County. A real one, not a fake one, which is debatable. Anyway, it's called Tackle Box, and it's run by Brian Husky, who competed in Top Chef Season 11 and made it into the top five. She said, look, he was on Top Chef, which, you know, because she knows me, will usually cause me to at least look at the food. And I saw his picture, and I remembered his face, but not his food. As it turns out, season 11 was in the fall of 2013, when I was on my way to checking out of everything, so I didn't ever talk about him here, but I will now. If I can describe the food, the best way I could do it is just to refer to the various gourmet food trucks that you might taste food from. It's bar food, basically, but really good bar food. Gourmet riffs on clam chowder, quesadillas, poke, various sandwiches, things like that. We had a grilled artichoke with spicy aioli, a pork belly banh mi sandwich, and a three-cheese quesadilla with poblano peppers. It would have been delicious if we were at a craft brew house or anywhere else, but when you're eating this stuff, surrounded by sand and the sound of crashing waves all around you, it just drives the experience up a whole lot of notches. I've thrown some pictures of the food and the entire menu board on the website. They're in a post description for this episode. If you'd like to check it out, mylifeasafoodie.com. The food was really good. And the one thing that stood out for me was the quesadilla. Now, you've certainly had quesadillas before, right? What set this one apart was not the flavor per se, but the crunchiness of the tortilla. It was paper thin, grilled to perfection, the right amount of char, and it snapped when you bit into it, like a really good hot dog. And because I'm a total food nerd, when I like something, I start to dissect it while I'm eating it. I start to try to figure out how they did this. And Michelle nails it right away. She said, it seems like they made the quesadilla in an uncooked tortilla. So the tortilla cooked while the cheese was melting. Now, if you make quesadillas at home, you probably do what most people do. You'll take a pre-cooked flour tortilla out of the package, fill it, and then grill it. You buy these uncooked tortillas in the deli section of the market, and you heat them yourself. And when you do that, what you get is a very thin, fresh tortilla that has a bit of snap to it. Cook it on heat high enough, and it'll be really crispy. And that's how this was done. At least, I'm assuming that's how this was done. Now, I haven't tried this yet myself, but believe me, I'm going to. And if you haven't yet tried these uncooked tortillas that you can prepare yourself, I urge you to do that and do it soon. They might not be available everywhere, but they've gotten really popular here in California, and they're far better than any pre-cooked stuff you'll find in the end aisle of any Mexican food section in your market. Trust me, these are great.
How are you, Chef?
Good. What are you doing?
I'm just going to do like a chicken broth with seared mushrooms and eggplant.
Okay, and skin?
Yes, Chef. I'm not forgetting about the skin yet.
Last Chance Kitchen's definitely a great opportunity for me, you know? It gives me a chance to redeem myself, and that's the bottom line. Finish strong. Cook a dish that leaves a lasting impression. Tom states that I've cooked one of my best dishes all season, which feels really good on the inside, you know? This is what it's about, you know, finishing strong.
Brian, definitely cooked the best dish you cooked all season, but Louis, that was the best dish I tasted all season.
It's good. You know, if anything, if I'm going to get beat, at least I got beat with the best dish of the entire season. At least I finished strong in the eyes of Chef Tom, who's been judging me all season long. So I take pride in that. At least I put a lasting impression.
Brian, you should feel really great about this. You had a great season. You went really far, and you didn't go down on the dish that lost.
You just went out on a dish that was just really tremendous.
Thanks for the opportunity. It's been a fun ride, so cool. Definitely. Thanks, Chef.
During this whole process, I was really able to cook for myself, cook it my way. And I think that's how I've been able to develop my own personal culinary voice. And
it's been a great experience to be able to not only cook for all these wonderful guest judges, but do little field trips, like going shrimping with Emeril, getting invited to have dinner with Chef Besh. It's been a great experience, and that's what really strives me to use Top Chef momentum and continue to do what I do best and love, cook food.
Morgan Spurlock has a new documentary coming this fall. It's called Super Size Me 2, Holy Chicken, which I have to say is perhaps the weakest fucking title I've ever seen for any film. But I'm not one to judge Spurlock, especially with this topic. So, great title. Love it. In fact, I saw a movie with a similar title the other day about this family of African-American dairy farmers who, as luck would have it, were all lactose intolerant. So, imagine the irony there. The film is called Chocolate Milk, Holy Shit. Available on Netflix. Check it out. Anyway, before you say Spurlock versus McDonald's, same old record, listen to this premise. A while back, he opened a four-day pop-up in Ohio, a fast food chicken joint. And it looked like a joke, but people actually thought he was serious. And listen, who knows? Maybe he is. Anyway, they were under the impression that he might open this thing permanently. What he was doing was actually shooting footage for his film. And some of the things I read about the place sounded like a giant goof. There was a note on the menu that said their coleslaw was made using KY jelly, and the tap water that they served was artisanal. The sequel takes a shot squarely at the fast food chicken industry, KFC, Popeyes, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, and probably El Pollo Loco while he's at it, although throwing El Pollo Loco in there seems almost unfair, since they do grill everything. They don't fry anything. And the ingredients seem somewhat fresh. Anyway, debuts at the Toronto Film Festival next month.
Holy chicken! Holy chicken!
I've eaten so much chicken over the course of this. What do we want it to be like? What do we want it to taste like? What do you want the texture to be? It's like everything. It's like I've eaten so much. And what is everybody else making? Like, what are all the other chicken restaurants doing? So I am in beautiful, scenic Columbus, Ohio for the grand opening of Holy Chicken, our pop-up chicken restaurant. It's going to be here for the public to try and for us to kind of experiment for the next 4 days.
Hi, welcome to Holy Chicken.
Part of what we want to do is kind of close the gap on where chickens come from. So now I know where they come from. They come from my farm in Alabama, where we raised them, where we fed them, where we took them to become the chicken sandwiches that are going to be served here. So the fact that we actually raise these chickens, it is probably the greatest farm-to-table story you could ever have.
Yeah. It's different. That's why I like it. Like this
sandwich is much greasy.
So this is kind of a crazy story. About 5 months ago, Michael Ruhlman posted an old poem on Instagram that caught my eye. It's an old, somewhat famous poem about parenting. And I talked about him a couple episodes ago and how he went through the ringer with his teenage daughter. The poem was about how every parent fucks their kids up. You can't help it. Our parents fucked us up, and we're going to fuck our kids up no matter how hard we try not to. It's inherent. It happens. Deal with it. Now, I would have just glossed over this, but I knew that poem because Michelle's doctor read it to us last year, and it stuck with me. I mean, it stuck hard. I had never heard of it before he recited it. Then there's Ruhlman posting it on Instagram. So I commented on it, and I told him the story of Michelle's doctor and how spot on I thought this poem was. Turns out, Beth Oretzky is a friend of Ruhlman's, and she liked my comment. For those of you who don't know who Beth is, she's a good friend of Bourdain's. They worked together very early in his career at 1/5 in New York. Beth is otherwise known as the Grill Bitch, and she was the one who designed his now famous Cook Free or Die logo with the skull chef in the toque blanche, the chef hat, with a knife in his mouth that has blood dripping from it. Now, I thought it was cool that she liked my comment, but then she actually goes on my Instagram, obviously see who I am. Maybe I thought, you know, she thought I was a chef or something. And she starts liking some of my photos, mostly of food, but also photos of the girls, photos of Michelle, dog training photos, things like that. Then she follows me. So I follow her back. I don't know how this happened, but we've become friends on Instagram now. Michelle made this killer bracelet for me using a skull pendant that I kept from a necklace that I bought years ago. And I posted a photo of it, and she went crazy for it. So I went full disclosure on her, and I told her that I had a thing for skulls and skeletons, and even had the logo that she designed for Tony tattooed on one of my calves. She was really gracious about it and said she was serious, that she loved Michelle's handiwork. Now, I know you're wondering, where the hell is this going? Here's where it's going. Beth was famous for making these bar nuts when she worked at 1/5. If you've ever been to a bar, and I know you have, you know that a cheap bowl of nuts will keep people at the bar longer than they intended to stay and sell a shit ton more drinks in the process. Apparently, these nuts that Beth made were like crack and kept people drinking far past closing time. She posted a photo not long ago that she was making and selling these bar nuts now herself. I mean, shit, they're obviously famous and delicious. Why not, right? I had seen the recipe for these in Bourdain's Appetites cookbook. I cooked the shit out of that book this past winter, but I never got around to making these nuts. So I told her that I would. She said, hey, better yet, why not order them from me? So I put an order in, and so can you. But in the meantime, I thought I would share the recipe from Bourdain's book so you could give these things a try yourself if you feel up to it, or at least see what all the commotion's about. Okay, you're going to need 4 large egg whites. What you do with the yolks is up to you, really. 5 pounds of mixed nuts, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, 1/4 cup of light brown sugar, 2 teaspoons of ground cinnamon, 1.5 tablespoons of ground cayenne pepper, and 1.5 tablespoons of salt. Preheat your oven to 325 degrees, and in a large mixing bowl, whisk the egg whites until they're foamy and nearly stiff. In another mixing bowl, combine the nuts, sugars, cinnamon, cayenne, and salt, and toss to coat. Fold in the egg whites, tossing gently to make sure the nuts have been coated in egg white. Divide the mixture evenly between 2 prepared sheet pans with parchment paper. Bake in the oven for 30 minutes, rotating the pans and stirring the nuts at the 15-minute mark. The nuts should be dry and crisp after 30 minutes. Remove from the oven and let cool before serving. And that is it. Very simple, but very great. Okay then, that about wraps it up for me. Thanks for tuning in. Audio in this episode, Jesus, we played a lot today. Comedy Central, Bravo, and Bloomberg. And yeah, I think that's it. Music from Alvaro and Patterns. If you like the music, check out the links on our website, download the songs, support the artists. MyLifeAsAFoodie.com. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Cheers.